Hi, hello and welcome to Online CBT Podcast. I'm Jaime and today we continue with our episode 2 of trauma. So today we are exploring the effects of trauma on our mind and body. Last time we tried to explore what was trauma or what is trauma, and today is the effect. So yeah, once again, thank you for leaving your feedback. Thank you for subscribing. That's really good. I'm glad that this is still the visualizations are helpful. So today we'll certainly do another visualization. I think I might take similar to last week and do it at the end and see how that goes for people. Okay, so let's start. So when we face a traumatic experience, our survival and overall well-being come under threat, right? So the feelings that we spoke last time of fear and terror, perhaps the unknown, the uncertainty or the expectancy of the trauma or the continuity of that affect both our minds and our bodies. Over thousands of years, our minds and bodies have evolved to protect us from such dangers, equipping us with various coping mechanisms. One of the things how I always explain it is that we have survived larger mammals or larger predators because we have had these ways of protecting ourselves and also our minds, right? So we need to think that this is the way we are responding is what we are designed to do. This is not a wrongdoing. This is not something that we are only. This is what we all do. This is how we are designed to do, what we evolved, or from an evolution perspective. So some of these responses are the fighting. So we go forward, we fight, we can flee, we can freeze, we can submitting, or we can dissociate. All of them aim at helping us survive the trauma we encounter. One group of people, or various group of people that I worked in the past and I work ongoingly, are people who are trained to do exactly the opposite what the body does. So if you are army, you are police, firefighters, ambulance, many professions, through the training and the profession, they go against what they might do. So some situations, whether your body would say, this particular situation I have to fight, you may be asked to flight. Likewise, people, the majority of us might flight, and these professions can carry their push to go the other way. So they would be against that normal process. And that is a very much a traumatic process. So sometimes you notice, or you when you work with certain professions, sometimes their training is more traumatic than the events they've gone through, because they are going against what the body is telling them. We need to know that whether there is a fight, a flight, a freeze, submitting or dissociating, these are unconscious. We don't consciously make these choices, okay? These things are things that it happen automatically, right? So what happens is we fight, our body gets automatically prepared for fighting. Then the flight, our body gets automatically prepared to run away by releasing adrenaline. When fight or flight are not an option, the body will freeze, rather like a rabbit in the headlights, or like a lizard, or like any sort of reptile, freezing, pretending to be dead. Then there is another two, that is the submission. People will try to appease. People will try to hide, not say anything, make themselves little as possible so they can survive the trauma. So if I'm not seen, then things may just stop. And then dissociation. So people dissociate and it happens, people shut off from their feelings and they can try, and they can sometimes feel as if they are outside the bodies or numb to their emotions. Sometimes this sense from childhood where people said, well, I just pretended I was somewhere else, or I pretended I was looking at it differently, or I just did something so I'm not there. So all of those happen automatically. What happens is that, so I'll describe something that happens with sexual abuse victims. Sometimes your body will automatically enjoy a sexual assault. And when I say enjoy, I mean the automatic process where in males may have an erection, or females may be male sort of lubricate. That sometimes happens, and that's a perfectly normal. Your body in that particular moment, it may have gone into freeze, or it may go into submission. Okay, so what it happens is that you just do whatever you can, so things just go by. What that brings is a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, a lot of embarrassment, because that means that I didn't do anything wrong, or pardon me, I apologize. That means that I might have wanted this, because I sort of have enjoyed or let it happen, and that's not true. What it happens more often than not is that actually your body is responding to something and is doing what it does the best to survive. And most of our physiological responses are automatic. Therefore, your brain will, therefore your heart will continue to be beating, you will continue breathing. This is a normal processes that our body does. So this is a sort of, we call it normalization. That is normal, normal process that your body goes through, and we are not consciously making those choices. Instead, they are instinct reactions ingrained in our body, so they are survival mechanisms. They just wired, we are wired that way. However, it's common for individuals to criticize themselves when these strategies happen or come up during events or episodes of traumatic. So you should have done more. Why didn't I react it? Or why did I run? Or how did I not defend myself? Or freezing in a sexual assault? Or not being able to fight back or escape? That's your body. Why did it happen? Well, that happens. That's you keeping yourself alive. It is crucial for all of us to understand that our responses are not a result of our conscious decision making. We are in automatic mode, and therefore we are reacting to what our brain is sort of orchestrating. So what it needs to do, what body is ensuring, so our vital survival. Okay. So one of the things that we do in therapy, or part of it, is start getting a bit of more understanding of the reactions that our brain does, how we react and why we react. And hopefully there's been a reduction of the strong emotions of self-blame, shame, guilt, that sort of reduces. So what I'm going to explain now will be a delight if I had prepared a video, because it's very technical and it's quite difficult. So for me, maybe you understand it straight away, so that's great. For me, I find it I understand it, I find it difficult to go through it. So there are three mains of our areas in our body that deal with the threat, right? And these are the thalamus, the amygdala, and the hippocampus. The thalamus acts as the gatekeeper to all new information reaching the brain. It assesses whether the information is threatening, and if it is, passes this message on to the amygdala. Then the amygdala is the brain alarm center. If it believes there is a threat, pardon me, it will make sure the body prepares itself to fight, flight, submit, freeze, or dissociate, by releasing stress hormones. So this is thalamus gatekeeper, gives to the amygdala, the alarm center, a signal, this is a threat. Then this response happens, releasing the stress hormones. Your body then reacts by increasing your heart rate, using shallow breathing, to take more oxygen and be ready for action. Tension in muscle, ready to fight, racing thoughts, so you can make rapid decisions about danger and so on. Then the hippocampus is a bit like a filing clerk, like a filing cabinet. It checks out the amygdala's assessment of the threat. So it compares it with other memories or similar situations. If the hippocampus decides that there is no a threat, it can tell the amygdala to calm down. Otherwise, the brain and body will prepare to react. Okay? So that is where sometimes when we see some of the elements, as we said, or childhood experiences, or as they call adverse childhood experiences, sometimes your brain will lead to that response of threat very often, or if you've been through a complex situation that left traumatic. In order to survive dangers, like with wild animals, the brain and the body then evolve to respond rapidly and immediately to the threat without even thinking. Just that happens. You have no time to start working out, right? Oh, well, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to prepare. And then I'll do that. That takes too much time, right? That is too much time that you haven't got to survive, okay? So what then it happens is that another challenges come up, right? So the memory, because having experienced extreme trauma or having experienced the past traumas or past experiences, then what we know is that a sort of your memories are stored different or in a different compartment, a different way where your day-to-day memories, so your trauma memories are stored differently or in a different manner, right? While the hippocampus would label your day-to-day memories in the context of holidays 2019, visit to this place 20 whatever, meeting 2005 meeting, this meeting happened, they are labeled, they are placed, then they are put into the context. What happens is with trauma memories is that they never get to the hippocampus that way, right? So they keep staying in the amygdala without being put in storage. So they are not organized, leading to the confusion and the association with the tense emotions such as fear or anger, right? So you're thinking if they are as they are at the forefront, as they are in that part of the alert system, so they sort of in the in between the thalamus and the hippocampus. So the amygdala then is in constant alert. Any reminders will trigger it. Any smells will trigger it. Sounds, smells, physical sensations, intimacy, anything will trigger because it's stored in that place. Right. Right, that doesn't make sense. I was going to ask, doesn't make sense. Hope it does. So what this leads is for confusion of your mind and this association of is constantly happening again. It is happening again. The memory is so at the forefront that it just fills. So when there is a trigger or a reminder that looks like, it's like, oh, that's happening again. Then the hormones get stress, release, stress hormones get released, then the strong feelings, the strong emotions come in, then the hyper alertness and the emotional numbness appear. What happens is, as a normal person that you are, I am, and everyone else are, you will then, if you have the sense that there is a danger coming, you will be hypervigilant and you have hyper awareness of your surroundings or hyper awareness of other people, because what you're trying is to survive, right? So hope you notice my passion about working with trauma and helping people to overcome difficulties. So the thing is, by exploring the ins and outs of trauma in our minds and bodies, we can then begin to understand how and why we'll respond to this, our responses. So one of the things we encourage people, or I encourage people always, is to remind themselves that this is trauma. what they are experiencing is the traumatic effects, right? That other people might say that wasn't a big event. Other people might say that get yourself together, which I really don't like hearing, or put yourself together, I think the expression, that you are a normal, you're responding normally to a normal situation. This is your body keeping your life, and then the memories get clogged. It's just hooked there, and that's where trauma work helps. So this might be from a childhood abuse for 15 years of your life. This may be from a ongoing, let's say, age 20 bullying and discrimination at work, or that may be lovely childhood until the age of 12, 13, you go to university, to high school, and then you start to get bullied. And then that is, or you might be never been in any traumatic event that has led to trauma re-experiencing, and then you're in a road traffic accident, you were hit by something, and then that trauma appears. Okay, so one we know is that then your response is a perfectly normal way of doing it. You are responding a normal way to an abnormal situation, and that is why compassion is really important, bringing it with this, with knowing this. Okay, by knowing this, we then can start to heal and building resilience and reminding ourselves that this is a perfectly normal way of doing it, of surviving. Okay, so this is quite a lot of information. So there are few things from a compassionate therapy or compassionate mind that will look into these things. So we have three main systems from a compassionate therapy or compassionate formulation, a compassionate understanding of certain difficulties. Then there are these three main systems which act as a protecting, so are regulating ourselves. So we have the threat protective system, we have our achieving, wanting, and we have our contentment, soothing, and safety, right? What happens is when if you think you have that threat focused protection and safety seeking, when that is more activated than the others and we don't have anything to soothe or feel safe, then we might start not wanting or not wanting to achieve or withdraw and so on. So we might look at compassion later on so we can understand a bit more how that would work. We might not, I haven't made my mind up, sorry. So because you are responding to a very abnormal situation in a very normal human way, then you may be starting to make choices or start to find your coping mechanisms. So I'll throw what things we see in practice. So things like using drugs or withdrawing from the world or taking your feelings out to other people, verbally or physically, controlling your eating, or perhaps engaging in unsafe driving faster or driving without, you know, a seat belt. You might avoid certain situations. You might self blame, so you might be hyper vigilant. So what some of them, they have the flip of the coin. So for example, with alcohol and drugs, they give you a short-term buzz, distracts you from sadness, stops you being numb. So in the long term, you might develop an addiction, you might create financial problems and have health consequences, and then impact your relationships. Likewise, if you think about withdrawing from the wall, then you don't have to face triggers, you don't have to pay in the pain of explaining or people asking and so on. So it'd be very individual, but then you will feel lonely and your mood will drop, and then it's just sort of existing rather than living. So those are all very normal ways of coping, and it's perfectly not surprising that someone who has been in a very traumatic event will and they are constantly triggered and is constantly re-experiencing this, they turn to these coping mechanisms. That is also perfectly normal. So I hope this makes sense. I hope this sort of helps you to understand a bit more how the trauma impacts your body. As I said, I do quite a lot of trauma. I'm very passionate about it. I think there is a lot of trauma in the workplace. I think there is a lot of trauma that is not spoken about. And as I said in the previous episode, there is that element of not having that network, support network. And that's because sometimes having therapists like myself or all will help people to go through naturally through those traumas. So if you enjoyed, I'm glad. Now I'll be doing the visualization, and that'll be all. So let's go for the visualization. And if you're not coming back, thank you for listening. Hi, so let's start the visualization. I would like you to start breathing in, and sort of you can choose now to breathe longer out or hold it for 2 seconds and then breathing out. And sort of closing your eyes, and if it feels safe and you're in your own space with no one around, you can then continue breathing in to your belly and then breathing out, or taking that 2 second hold breath and breathe out. Just try to get it in a way that is rhythmical. You can use the beat from the left to the right, to the left to the right. You can use an itch to breathe it in and breathe it out. And just breathing in and breathing out. I would like you to then take your time and find that color. From all the colors you know, find that color that you associate with compassion. Or a color that sort of brings together the qualities of warmth and kindness. It doesn't have to be a particularly color that you have clear picture of. It could be more the sense of a color. A sense of a color that brings compassion, warmth, and kindness. And notice how that color surrounds you, around you, surrounds your head, your chest, and your face. Noticing you're breathing in the color onto your tummy, and how that compassionate, warmth, and kind color expressed through your body. And then you breathe it out. And as you notice it around you, notice how the kindness and warmth and compassion heals some of the difficult thoughts that you have about yourself and the difficult emotions that come with those. Notice it perhaps if it turns into a light that just flows through you from your top of your head through all these areas that you need kindness and compassion. Then sometimes we notice our face is tense, or we are frowning. I invite you, with your eyes closed, take that light, that color, sort of breathing in and breathing out. Notice how it eases some of the facial tension, and how that easing those fills with the rest of your body. Now, as you have it, the light, and you imagine the light or the color around you, just imagine how the color feels flowing through you, and your focus of your mind and your feelings. And curiously, notice how that color helps those areas. What strength and what courage that compassionate, kind and warm color can give you. And notice how perhaps some of the difficulties you're experiencing, some of the thoughts and some of the emotions, are very difficult and painful, and that you can use this compassionate warmth and kind color to help you to ease some of those blocks or barriers. What we're trying to do is to bring that awareness of the warmth and compassion and kindness to yourself. And if you experience some of the thoughts, or your mind wanders, or you experience some of the difficult emotions and physical sensations, that's okay. Just gently half a smile and remind yourself that this is really difficult and that you are in a journey of healing, and bring yourself back onto that rhythmic breathing of breathing in and breathing out longer, and to that compassionate warmth and kind color. Just let it evolve. What if it's a light to go through some of these places that may feel those difficult emotions? Continue breathing in and breathing out, and be curious and compassionate about how that color can help you. Don't dismiss anything. Don't let some of the inner voice to underplay the power of your self-compassion and the warmth and the kindness of that color. And continue breathing in and breathing out. And I will ask you to, in your imagination, open your arms and embrace that color or that light. Embrace the wisdom, the strength, the kindness, and the warmth that that color may bring to you. And just notice how that changes the way you think about yourself, way you feel about yourself. I would like you now to get that color, sort of take a piece of it, or take some piece, or even you can make it small and small to the size of your hand. And put it in a form or in a shape of something that can fit in that in your pocket, and that perhaps you have nearby you or always with you. That could be a stone, a key ring, a photo, something that represents in a physical presence the warmth, kindness, compassion of that light that brings with some strength and warmth. And you can then put it in your pocket and take it as you need to. And as you're holding it in your hand, just notice how that feels. And taking a couple of more breaths in and breaths out, I'd As you open your eyes in the count 2, 3, 2, 1. So thank you for joining in. I invite you to, if you have found that place, if you brought that color that brings that compassion and warmth, to bring it to in that physical presence. That may be a little pebble or a, and you can put it in your pocket. That could be a key ring, something that reminds you that you can take this time to be kind and compassionate to yourself. And today we'll leave it here and we'll meet in a few more days, few more weeks. I hope you enjoyed and thank you for listening.